the Oceania Champions League winners brings you.
Here we go. To Phoenix City for another week. It's a big week this week. Obviously, Mark Rudan announced as head coach. We'll get to that in a second. But Cam, how are you doing?
I've been better, actually, Patrick. You've been better? Thank you for asking.
You're at sick, are you?
Well, about year there, and I've got a sick family at home, so I've had to have some time off work with them. So it's been a pretty stressful week at this week, to be fair.
All right, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you get to talk football for a little while now. So.
Exactly. This is why I'm glad I'm here tonight, to get some time away from children, which is I'm thankful for.
Do they listen to this podcast?
Nope.
There we go. Lucky. And Dave, you're here as well.
I am here.
And Frosty's away. Dave, how's your week been?
It's actually been all right. It's, yeah, the kind of quiet period of my work cycle. So
oh, good. Yeah.
This week's quite good. Next week will be horrible.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll leave you alone next week and won't get yelled at. It'd be great.
To be fair, I'm just getting amped now for the World Cup. It's so close.
I looked at it and I was like, it's 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's like 17 days now, or 16 days. It's just...
Yeah.
Actually, 15 maybe. It starts week on Thursday, 2 weeks on Thursday.
Oh, I'm like mixed, like half excited but also half dreading how little sleep I'm going to be getting because there's a lot of football to be watching.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, just trying to plan that around work and how that's going to work is just me going, there's not going to be a lot of sleep. Hours available. It's just not going to exist.
I'm stoked we're going live the week before the World Cup starts. So literally the next 2 weeks are going to be tough. And then after that, it's just all going to be football. I'm so excited. Yeah, it's like, I'm glad there's only one 10 o'clock at night game as well. And that it's Australia getting pumped by France. That's even better.
See, I would like more 10 o'clock at night games because then I can watch those games. Whereas I'm going to miss the 1 a.m. games. I'm going to make half
midnight.
The 4 a.m. games.
Midnight 3 and 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, not... 1, 4, and 7.
Oh, is it? Is it midnight 3 and 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make half of those 3 a.m. games, probably. Well, most of the 6 a.m. games, but like a 10 p.m. game every night would be great. But.
So I'm making I'm going to make the 3 a.m. games live every night.
Yeah.
And I'm going to record the other two, and then I'm going to pick the best match that I think is the best match and watch it that night.
Oh yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So I'll see at least 2 games a day every day.
My plan is similar. I'll be doing the 6 a.m.s every day, and I'll watch the other two. That night.
Yeah.
But where the 3 a.m. is going to be a really juicy game, I'll watch both the 3 and the 6 live.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
The 6 is going to struggle, obviously, with kids. I'm going to struggle with the 6. So it's literally going to watch that game till 5 in the morning. Then I'll get ready for work and then get the kids up and get them off.
Yeah.
So, but at least that way I can finish work early and I'm still home to watch
a
game of football.
Isn't the World Cup such a good thing? Isn't it so good?
It so is. And if you haven't got onto the tipping comp yet, get involved, man. This is just adds to the excitement and the enjoyment of it.
Yeah, Cam's running a tipping competition. Do you want to plug
it? Do every World Cup.
Yeah,
this is the third World Cup. I've done a couple of Euros. I've done some Copper.
Is it open to all podcast listeners?
Anybody at all want to get in contact with me?
Where can they find the details?
Yeah, so there's a post on the forums. There's a post on my Twitter and my Facebook, PhotoMac Facebook page. Just flick me a DM if you're interested with your email address and I'll forward you the email with all the details and the link.
And if you don't know how to get in contact with Cam, email podcast@yellowfever.com and we'll put you in touch with him.
Cool.
But I think it's a $5 buy-in and then all the buy-in gets distributed among the winners.
Yeah, so basically, depending on how many people actually finally get involved.
This is why I want more people to enter, so when I win, I get more money.
Yeah, so if the pot...
He's not going to win.
He's not.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, if the pot
I'll
gets...
have you know, when I was 9 years old, at the 2002 World Cup, I won my mother's office tipping competition because I was doing her picks for her and I won it. So I was 9 years old and I won it. I haven't been that good since. But
I'll have you know.
I have history.
2010 World Cup, I made a grand profit on my bets.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, that's not a bad idea. Just get like $1 or $2 per game on.
Well, actually, I tend to do multis, like out of the group multis. So who's going to progress or win from each group?
Oh, yeah.
And then 2010, one of my bets came down to the USA to progress, and they scored in like the 92nd minute of their last game to go through.
They will not be scoring at all this year.
No, they're not. But that won me, I think it was like $300 or $400 on that one bet, of $5.
All right, should we move back to the Phoenix?
But we can talk about World Cup for a long time.
Yeah.
That's for another podcast.
Let's move back to the Phoenix, where the gears have been in motion and there's a new head coach, as I said earlier, Mark Rudan.
Or Rudan.
Rudan?
I think it's Rudan. It's what we've been saying is Rudan. I think that's how I remember hearing it pronounced on the TV. Fox programs that we used to get.
Yeah. The Australians aren't necessarily the the guy for the pronunciation.
They're not the byword for political correctness and cultural sensitivity. So
no, I'm actually very excited about this. I was getting to the point where I thought I could only be disappointed by the coaching announcement, and this is the complete opposite of me. I'm very excited about this appointment.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like I'm going to play a bit of cliche bingo on this, and I'm going to hit a few of those bingo points because we've made them quite a lot in the last 2 years. Where we've said when we pointed Daria, or before we pointed Daria, that Mark Rudan is actually a really good shout. Mm. He's done the hard yards. He's done all of the taking what was a big team not performing and pulling them up to win trophies in, was it Sydney Olympic?
Sydney United.
That's right.
Don't get those confused. Jeez. Yeah,
he's well and truly connected through, obviously, not just through the media, but through his football career in Australia.
Yeah.
From watching him on TV, he's shown me he is very tactically aware, and which for me is a really, really good pickup for us.
He was always the Fox Sports Frosty, the one who had all the technical knowledge.
Yes,
and was able to apply it into the situations, which was really interesting as a viewer to listen to him as opposed to Bozzard spouting shit.
Exactly, and it's the fact that he can now take that and put that into an A-League level, where obviously it was working at an NPL level. It really is the next step and the next logical path for him. And whilst I'm sure he was hoping to get the Sydney job and probably became available when Corica got the Sydney job, I don't think this is a bad choice for him to come here, where the pressure that's on is purely around licensing. It's not around the same kind of pressure you would get in Sydney, where you have to win leagues. Here, top six. He gets top six and he gets it for the next 2 years. We're good.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think the pressure on results is there, but it's not the same pressure you'd have at Sydney. But I think the best thing about this for me is I remember us only a couple of months ago talking about how we thought he was the likely one to get the Sydney job. We've got the coach that we thought was going to be coaching Sydney this coming season. How could you not be excited by that?
Yeah.
Now, Sydney have a great track record and they do really well with their appointments. Obviously, they chose not to take him, but I think he was well in the mix for them and we've ended up with him instead, and that's fantastic for us. I think he's exactly the sort of coach we need. He knows the league well, and the way he spoke today, he clearly has the kind of the passion and the drive and the fight that we need out of this. And we're not expecting a top one or two finish here. We need solid mid-table performance this season, and I think he can absolutely deliver that. And he's got most of a squad to fill to, you know, whatever his requirements are. And if with that kind of free reign, all the import slots available and, you know, 10 spots, he should be able to achieve that pretty comfortably, you'd think. If he doesn't, then it's really on him.
And considering he's got a couple of game breakers already in that squad, and three, to be fair, I think, in Singh, Krishna and Burns, who genuinely are top quality players for this league, they just need something in there to help them fire. Yep. And I really believe he can be the man to do it.
Yeah, watching the press conference, we were all there, and it was really interesting listening to Mark Rudan, because everything he said was just solidifying in my head that he was the right choice.
Hmm.
There was not a single thing he said that I went, oh, that's interesting, or, oh, you're just saying this because.
Yeah.
Everything that he said was actually a really good thing to be saying and the right thing to be saying. The fact that he was going to come in here and there would be changes, and he wasn't going to shy away from the fact that there would be changes to how things are set up, and there would be changes to the playing staff. Obviously, new players to come in, there would be changes to tactics, and things wouldn't be the same that they've been at the Phoenix. And even, I'm not quite sure to what extent he meant this, but he meant, like, even in the footballing setup around the club, around the management role, there would be changes, and that's a good thing. You can't really say that what the Phoenix have been doing for the last 3 years has been working. So someone who can come in there and he obviously knows what he wants to change. He just didn't verbalise it at the press conference for reasons.
And it's not his right. He doesn't need to.
That's just one example of all the right things he was saying in the presser.
Oh, and one of the good things kind of behind that as well is I think even last season we could see the club had a desire to change. I mean, with Kalisic, obviously the changes he brought were to the detriment of the playing squad, and that all worked out really badly. But they absolutely gave him a level of free rein to bring in the change in culture that he thought was what they needed. Obviously, that turned out to be wrong, but I don't think the club restrained him or held him back from bringing in the change he wanted. It just turned out to be the wrong change. So I think we can see that he's probably going to get that same level of, you have identified these things, go and do them, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. I don't think he's going to be hamstrung by, you know, remember the days where Gareth was turning up to training and, you know, trying to run things and add his clipboard and stuff. I don't think we're going to see anything like that. I think he's going to be able to affect whatever change he'd like there, and it'll be on him how it pans out.
The thing that he kept coming back to was team culture.
Hmm.
And that's something that we all know Sydney FC have got down pat. They don't have they might not necessarily have the best players in the league in terms of the Australian playing staff, but they have one of the better cultures of the league that Graham Arnold's instilled. And Mark Dan kept referencing the team culture and what he wants, man management, and what he wants to do with the culture. And I think in a salary cap league where things are supposedly a level playing field, that's absolutely going to be the difference. And the fact that Mark Dan was so conscious of it and kept referring back to it, and a lot of his answers, he wasn't just trotting it out as a buzzword either. He was actually referencing team culture as a way to achieve this and a way to achieve that, and answering questions, which I was really heartened by. This is awkward. Nobody's jumping in.
I just completely agree with that. I have nothing to add to it. I think that's exactly right. And I think it's probably something we'll talk about later when we introduce our guests is culture and how much that can add to bringing out, you know, the kind of the team rather than the individuals. You know, you get that whole unit working together, and I think that's the key thing he's focused on here, is not necessarily having a team of the best individuals, but getting the best out of the individuals by bringing them together as a team.
Yeah, he said a few things in the press conference that were interesting. The first of which is that he has 5 import slots to play with. Bearing in mind that Roy Krishna is contracted, that's a very interesting statement, which means that what I would read from that is that Roy is no longer an import.
Yeah. There was rumours that he wasn't going to be.
Yeah, but I
know that's been working on, obviously, for his residency status.
Yeah. I would take what was said today as almost confirmation that he's not going to be an import next season, which is fantastic for
us.
Devil's advocate, it also was discussed that we have 11 players contracted separate to Piney's 12. Now, Piney's 12 is correct if you include Louis Fenton, but maybe the one who's dropped is Roy.
So
I think it's very unlikely, but imagine if that's the outcome.
No, so in the one-on-ones afterwards, Rudan, he said more about that. He said, I didn't know about Louis Fenton.
Okay.
So he actually said, yes, the 12th player is Louis Fenton, and they will have to look at Louis and that kind of thing. So he said that. So,
good. Well, even better, because, you know, I think that would be a massive unlikely scenario, but imagine if it was.
We're not losing Roy. Let's just put that out there. Roy's own, we've gone through this already last season. Like, we don't need to do that to ourselves again.
Oh, you know, you've got to throw out a few conspiracies. Come
do
on.
You have to?
Yeah, you do.
Okay, conspiracy. We've only signed him to appease Fox and the FFA. How about that for conspiracy?
That's a empty your vessel bingo type moment, one, because that's come up so many times. And to be fair, I'm guilty of saying that, but I've said that literally last 2 years, that if you sign someone like Rudan, particularly him, I've named him many times, if you sign him, we get Fox on board. Now, you poo-pooed that. You actually, in a previous pod, you've actually said that he doesn't work there anymore. They're not his mates. We don't know that, blah, blah, blah. Immediately, Nick Meredith has come out and said, I'm no longer in the Knicks. He is a mug. I totally agree. The guy's a twunt, but he is.
He doesn't even work for Fox, so no.
Yeah. Point of order, do I need to kazoo out the word twunt?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
You probably should, actually, just because, legal purposes.
Nick Meredith, I have Nick Meredith down on my bit of paper to talk about, because his arguments have just been so stupid on Twitter. But the reality is, no one listens to him. He doesn't actually work for Fox. He just gets to commentate from the sideline at Brisbane games because there's no one else there to do it, and he basically does it for free. So he obviously has a bit of a soapbox there, but he's never put out a meaningful argument about this.
Yeah.
And that's only demonstrated by the fact that appointing someone he likes as manager makes all of his other concerns fall away.
Yeah, I mean,
because they're just so fragile, and it's just a house of cards that's just not.
Entirely agree.
It makes me disappointed that Frosty's not here, because he actually made this point to Nick Meredith.
Correct.
On Twitter. He said that I can't remember exactly what his exact wording is, and I can't do it justice, but he said, if all of your other arguments are so weak that one person can change all of them, maybe your arguments weren't that good in the first place.
So, and so everyone knows that, but I don't know that this will necessarily turn around guys like Bozza. I think Bozza, whilst I disagree with his arguments, makes reasonable arguments at times.
He justifies himself.
And, you know, he backs it up with, you know, some pseudo fact. And I don't know that this appointment is enough to turn that around. And it certainly isn't enough to turn around some of the public who have now got behind that argument of they're Kiwis, we just don't need them in the league. They've bought into the narrative around we're taking $2 million out and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't think appointing an Australian coach fixes any of that, but I do think it'll win over some quarters, which is good. I think it'll staunch the bleeding.
I think it will reduce the noise for at least a period of time and allow him to get his feet under the desk and at least play some games before they start going, actually, you know what, he's not doing a good job, or actually, he's doing a great job. This is awesome. This is what we need.
Man, this is a guy that was looking for an A-League job for many years. I didn't know that he turned down the Jets job in 2015 until today.
And he didn't actually say why he turned it down either, reasons.
There were reasons, yeah. Mm. But I didn't realize he'd done that. But this is a guy who he had applied for the Sydney job twice, not got it twice, for whatever reasons, don't know. I'm sure he's applied to other jobs around the league.
The second time around just now, I think it's just because they had the opportunity for consistency.
Totally, yeah.
Because Corrick can just move up. And this is a guy, the only reason.
This is a guy who's getting his A-League chance at the Phoenix, and that's a good thing for the league. Not only can we develop a bunch of Australian players that Mark Rudan will no doubt bring in because he knows about them, we're getting the chance to develop a young Australian coach. I say young, he's 42.
It's young in coaching.
Young in coaching, yeah. But a young Australian coach. And I think that's a really exciting thing for the Phoenix to be able to say, hey, look, we're just like you. We're just like Adelaide. Yeah. We're just like Newcastle Jets. We're exactly the same. We're just in Wellington. That's the only difference.
I think the thing about Rudan and the Knicks is we both require, in the same time frame, the same things out of this. Yeah. So we require him to be good because we need to stay in the league. He needs to perform because he wants to go on to bigger and better things. It's actually the perfect fit purely because within a time frame, a short time frame, both of these, both the club and the manager, need to perform at an excellent level.
Yep. That's exactly right. I think it's interesting because, so, for example, appointing Ernie didn't earn us any of that same goodwill. And obviously he's not a young Australian coach, but he's one who's done very well in the league and, you know, has a lot of friends around the league, but he didn't earn that same goodwill. But I think for him as well, coming in as a former winner of the league, aiming for fifth place is a thing he's not used to doing. He's used to having, you know, the budget behind him and aiming to win a bloody thing. Whereas that's not what's expected here. We're not expected to come in and win the thing right off the bat. But he needs a solid performance, and we just need a solid performance.
He said he was
very
a winner.
Aligned.
He said he was a winner. He doesn't,
yeah,
like,
he doesn't
losing.
Like losing.
Yeah, and he's going to put that across the squad, and that's brilliant. We need that attitude to come across. Yeah, I want the guys to go out there and play to win. And if it's play to win 5-4, go and win 5-4 and do that every week. That's fine.
I don't think at the end of the season, if we finish fourth, he'll be at all disappointed with that. You know, on any given day, he'll be gutted with a loss. But I think across the season, fourth, he'd be bloody happy with. Fifth, he'd be happy with, you know, and we would be too.
One of the things I'm really happy about is we've signed a guy with league knowledge. And this was something that was severely lacking with Darje, is that he just hadn't worked in a salary cap league where you could have marquee players and where you had a squad size of 23 and no more, and where you could have these players outside the cap, all the little things that make the A-League strange and weird, and partly why we enjoy the A-League, I guess. Rudan already knows all this. He's been around the league for 10 years, 12 years, 13 years. And he understands all that and doesn't have to learn it all first. I think that's going to be really important to get on the ground running on day one and to get results on day one. Mm. We don't have 10 games in our season where we can afford to lose or draw them all and go 11 games before we get our first win. We don't have that this season. That's what's happened under Darje, and that's what happened under Ernie. And that was okay because we were like, cool, it's your first year at the club and you're just learning the system. Whereas we're not going to have that here so much, I don't think.
We don't, yeah, we just can't.
We can't afford it.
We can't have it. No, because we need those crowds to grow. And to grow those crowds, we need to win at home. And that's as simple as that. And if we win at home, the 4 or 5 games we have here prior to Christmas, we know that after Christmas, the crowds will grow. And it's a simple, simple metric. And winning at home does that. That's all he has to do. And if you win those games at home, you are likely to be in the top 6.
I would quite like some away wins too.
Yeah, fair. But the point being,
yeah,
Yeah, I think an interesting one feeding into that as well is exactly how he's going to run his preseason. I mean, we've seen traditionally at the Phoenix that the coach gets to decide essentially who they're going to be playing, at least within reason. You know, we've had overseas tours, we've had pretty local teams played, we've played NPL teams before, we've played A-League teams before. It's going to be interesting to see what level he sets that at, and if we can get some of that happening here. You know, if say we play an A-League team here, and obviously we will play an A-League team in an FFA Cup game, you know, how our results go in those sorts of performances might well build into that season opener with some excitement, which means we're already hitting the ground with a level of momentum, which would be fantastic. So those four games, you might already be starting from quite a good level if that preseason's looking really good.
Yeah, so the press release that the club have put out says that the club has organised a great off-season with games in Asia and Australia already booked in. So the game in Asia would be the Capital Cup against Beijing.
Yeah.
And the games in Australia would most likely be your Newcastle Jets and West Sydney.
Because it seems to be who he always plays.
It would seem likely, but it could well be that he's interested in taking on Sydney United or someone like that. It'll be interesting to see what sort of stamp he puts on that preseason.
And Ernie's done that before too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He did that 3-week tour over there where we played NPL side with our reserves.
Yeah.
And the guys
Blacktown?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then also played, I think it was FFA Cup, but they played an A League team outside.
Yeah.
Mariners, 1-0 win. That's right. Watson got the goal.
That wasn't FFA Cup. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we play minimal central league teams like we seem to do on Adaye. Like we played Wests and somebody else and that was it.
No, we haven't played Wests.
Only West.
Only played West.
Yeah.
The only Central League team under Dario.
Yeah.
Whereas under the others we played all sorts. And under Ricky we played pretty much everybody.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
So the elephant in the room that wasn't really broached in the press conference today was why do we think it took so long to sign him?
Sydney job. I think that's the key here. I think he only became available to us after he wasn't taking Sydney. That's the job he would have wanted. And they only appointed Corica 16 days ago, something like that?
14 days, 2 weeks exactly today.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think there may well have been contact before then, but I think we would have been a very clear second choice behind Sydney. I mean, and that shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone.
No.
So to take 2 weeks from the point he found out he wasn't getting that job to signing him isn't that slow. You do have to wonder what had happened before they'd appointed Corica, because I don't think we were sitting on our hands waiting for Sydney to appoint someone.
No, I think we probably had an offer out and that person may have taken something else. So if it's someone around our league,
slap someone in the face.
Well, yeah, possibly. Or but it could be like the Wanderers have appointed Marcus Babbel, and who was the guy that's gone to Perth?
Popovich.
You know, there's these guys may have been there with an offer and they've chosen something else.
I think there would have been. I would be very surprised if we hadn't have talked to some of those guys.
Yeah.
And the other name that's been bandied about is obviously Kenny Lowe. You know, there's been a few people that I'd be surprised if we haven't been in discussions with, and you know, we've decided to go this way.
Brilliant decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, given that we made it this far into the off-season without a coach, and I thought we were going to be at slim pickings and end up with someone the level just below where Rudan would be, I'm very happy with the signing. I would have been happy with the signing 2 months ago as well.
Yeah.
But with very minimal time until the season starts, to get a guy of Rudan's quality and tactical nous and league knowledge, I'm really happy that we've been able to make the signing, even though it's been 90 days since we got rid of
Daya. Yeah, it would have been nice to have had him 2 months ago, but I think as we saw last year, I mean, there was a lot of angst around
we
wouldn't be able to fill a squad with players and blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't think that's actually a legitimate problem.
Yeah.
We're still at a point of the off-season now where we will comfortably fill our squad with whoever it is that he would like to bring in.
I was in that camp last year. I thought that we had signed a coach way too late, and I was just wrong, and I admitted this, that you were right, Dave.
I'm looking for you to admit it again.
Yeah, it doesn't make a huge difference, because realistically, all the other clubs aren't really signing players yet. They're releasing some players, but they haven't made big signings.
No, and so I wasn't just fishing for you to say
it's,
again.
But it's true.
But I think the thing is, it would have been nice to have him 2 months ago, but I don't think that 2 month period actually is going to make a material difference to what he's able to achieve here. You know, there's some stuff that would be nice for him to have, say, you know, been across the tail end of the season for us. That might have been nice, but it's no big loss. He's close enough to the league that he still knows what he's coming and working with. He knows the players who he's got already signed.
Yeah.
He knows how we were playing and what he will want to change there. Being in and around the training sessions and around those game environments might have helped a little, but not a huge amount. We are not at any detriment appointing him now, compared to if we had 2 months ago.
And I say, I don't think we'd have appointed him 2 months ago because he wouldn't have come because he was still looking for Sydney. And, you know, the last 2 weeks, obviously, the guy's, he's married, he's got two kids that are young. It's, you know, shifting them over here and all that kind of stuff is a big decision to make, and, you know, negotiating salaries and, you know, so on and so forth, and actually learning about what the, goes on in the back end of a club, that can take a couple of weeks. So I'm comfortable with that.
And I think what he spoke about today, he didn't specifically say it, but it sounds like this was a done deal at least 3 or 4 days ago.
Well, yeah,
more.
he said it's only been a couple of days.
Okay,
so I would say this was Monday.
Yeah, so it's, but then there were discussions would have happened late last week, and so
exactly.
It's not actually. Well, he didn't sign the contract today. It wasn't actually 2 weeks. It was probably more like a week and a little bit.
I would say an offer was put to him last week, and he's taken the weekend to think on it. Signed on Monday morning, and,
which makes a lot of sense.
And it's gone from there. That would be my guess at the timeline.
Yeah.
I've got things on my bit of paper.
Yeah, you lead.
All right. So in the press conference today, he said a few interesting things that I think are worth picking out. I think the average punter listening to them probably didn't hear them, but you've already talked about one, mentioning that he's got 5 import slots available. He also was asked about a potential assistant manager, and he obviously talked about Greeny as an option there. And, you know, said he likes Greeny, gets on well. Now, so there's two things here that are worth talking about. One, we know from having talked to Domi and having talked various leader people that the club have been lobbying to try and get Kiwis recognised as locals for the purposes of coaching, which would mean Greeny has the licences to be an assistant. If that hasn't happened, though, he doesn't have his pro and he still can't be an assistant. So you could read that as either a suggestion that actually there's some progress on that and Greeny may well be able to be our assistant for the season, or conversely and potentially worryingly, he's not aware of that and therefore hasn't thought at all about an assistant coach.
Or alternately, they've found a way for him to sit as pro.
Possibly. Yep, absolutely. But it was an interesting statement.
It could also be that whether Greeny gets a job or not depends on whether the thing goes through.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things at play that could be the case here.
Yeah, but it's interesting that he's willing to entertain Greeny as his assistant. He seemed reasonably happy with that idea.
Yeah.
But obviously he wasn't committing to it because there are these other factors at play.
Yeah,
but,
and also I assume there are going to be more talks with Greeny and that kind of thing. And Ernie didn't even confirm Greeny for about a week and a half into Ernie's tenure here. So I'm assuming that even if Greeny is going to stay, he won't be confirmed for another couple of weeks or so.
Well, he's still got his he's still going to be running the academy. That is his job. So
I think Greeny definitely has a role with the club.
Yeah.
No matter what, I think that's kind of confirmed. But it'll be interesting to see whether they found a way to get him in as assistant, because that would be fantastic.
Yeah, actually, this is interesting for me because I had just in my head assumed that Greeny is our assistant coach, but he wasn't at all last season. So
and he doesn't have the licenses to be it.
You're right.
In theory.
Yeah. You're right. I was just in my head going, oh, yeah, it makes sense to keep Greeny on as assistant, but Greeny wouldn't be carrying on as assistant. It would be actually a new role for him.
Correct.
So, yeah, it's, yeah, fair point.
So that was interesting. The other one was he was asked about Kiwi players by a couple of different journalists, kind of alluding to it in various ways around how the club have kind of put out this idea that they want to sign young Kiwis and play with more Kiwis than they have in the past. And we've talked about this on the pod before, and we've been slightly in disagreement around it. But it was interesting to hear Rodan say what I think I would agree with around he would like, you know, he talked about a couple of gems that we found last season, I assume referring to Sarpreet and Libby. But he was saying, you know, he wants to look at that academy structure. He wants to look around and he feels like there's probably, a couple more nuggets of quality there. And he'd look to get those in. But he didn't commit beyond that to saying, you know, we're going to prioritize signing Kiwis here. And I think we all know his ties to Australia and young Australian players and his scouting in that area will be much stronger. So I think he kind of committed to having a look here and bringing in the best, but not just filling a squad with Kiwis for the sake of it. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, whether that's what the club meant by their Kiwis first kind of mantra, or whether this the best, but the Australia for the rest is kind of okay.
You actually make a good point, because Andrew Vorman today on Twitter was saying that if the Phoenix coach isn't on a flight to India now to look at a fantastic group of young Kiwi footballers who are over there with the All Whites, then that needs to happen. If he's only looking at the Nuggets, I would say he probably knows who they are already, or at least the club already do, or they know where they're looking to find those.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think what the impression I got, and this might be wrong, I might be off the ball here, but the impression I got is that he – committed more to the academy structure that exists already than he did to just signing New Zealand players from the All Whites. I think he definitely committed to the fact that we have a very good academy that is well respected among the league, and it is churning out players like we've seen with Libby and that. And he committed to utilising that as his way of bringing young players through. But he never actually outright said beyond there must be a couple of nuggets out there. He never actually said that I'm going to bring in lots of Kiwis from
I don't think there was an implication at all that he was going to bring them back from overseas, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're talking about necessarily bringing, you know, your Brockies and your Boxalls and your Tuya Lomas back home.
I didn't get that at all. I think what he was saying is more players like Tim Payne or Andre de Jong or
Justin Gully, Jack Henry,
those guys, the ones in New Zealand already.
Well, yeah, so I think the other thing he said, which ties in nicely to that, is he said that he'd be made aware of, he said a couple, I'm going to interpret that to mean two. Literally two,
yeah.
Players that he's been made aware of around that national league by Gilly. Now, I would read that as one of those players is Justin Gully.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's a position we need. He's been playing excellently. I would assume that's essentially Gilly saying, this is the guy you need to sign for that spot. And Rudan obviously hasn't looked at him yet, hasn't had that discussion, but he feels like he's got a strong lead there. I wonder who the other one is.
Yeah.
There's a few names. You know, you've said Jack Henry. I think that'd be a good shout. Guys like Liam Wood might well be in that mix as well as going, here's a guy we should be looking at for our centre-back cover.
I'd throw Scott Hillier in there after his performances this season.
And so it's interesting to wonder who that other guy might be. Tim Payne, good shout for that.
Yeah.
But I don't think those guys fit in that mould of nuggets he'll be pulling out of the kind of youth system of the country. I think these are guys that are at a different stage that will be scouted and known quantities.
When Ernie was appointed, and this was, 5 years ago now, so I can't remember exactly, but I remember Ernie saying something like, there must be another Marco Rojas out there.
Yeah.
And there's just not, really. Like, there's not a player that's going to be that kind of standout quality. We might have found one in Sarpred, but we're not going to find another one out of nowhere that we don't know about already. They already exist. We're not just going to find this guy playing for Hamilton that is going to blow the league away. That's not really going to happen.
I actually think there might be. There might be that talent out there. If you look at someone like Elijah Just playing for West and trialling at, Pigsville?
Yeah.
You know, those kind of guys do exist. They might not be Rojas, but they could easily be a Sarpreet or Libby.
I think... what Pat's alluding to here is that we know about guys like that. But I would argue we knew about Rojas as well.
True.
You know, he wasn't an unknown. He just hadn't been given a chance by the club.
Yeah, exactly.
But there were a lot of people singing his praises. But the difference is now, those guys who their praises have been sung, there's an academy to bring them into and have a really good look at them for a year or two. Whether that be the Phoenix Academy or places like Olay, they're kind of in the shop window a little there. I don't think we're going to find someone who's not part of one of those academy systems just appearing out of nowhere.
Yeah,
that's because I actually think there's that other person could easily be Elijah Just or could easily be Callum McCowart or Owen Parker Price. You know, there's a lot of good young Kiwi guys there who could easily fill that second slot, and it's hard to know where he's going to go with that.
But isn't it interesting? Isn't this fun?
That's
now?
It's good.
Yeah. That we can put the coaching talk behind us and go, players.
Yeah. Well, and like I say, I'm interpreting a couple to be literally two. A couple could easily mean there's two or three.
Yeah.
And he's just chosen that word. So, that'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. I think we'd all be in agreement that surely one of those names is Gully.
Yeah.
But it's great that there's so many others that we think potentially could be making the step up to A-League.
Hmm. Speaking of choosing words, how good was he with the media and how, like, just smooth addressing questions and answering the way that he wanted to and that kind of thing.
It just showed that he'd worked.
It was so impressive to watch.
It showed that he'd worked in the media.
Yeah,
he had media training. He's used to being in front of the cameras. He's used to putting his ideas across in that kind of environment. Obviously, we've watched him do it on TV for years, obviously, with Fox. So
I went back through my tweets. I searched my name and Rudan. And there were some things I disagree with Rudan on, apparently.
That's fair enough. But don't have to agree with him all the time. But
those
then again,
no longer exist.
Yeah, but it's also not. Yeah, you bet you wish you'd that with Hamish Watson.
No, I'm fine with Hamish Watson. I really rate Rudan as a coach.
I really wish we'd tried to get him as a guest today.
What, Hamish Watson?
I just to get you two in the same room. He wouldn't have come on, but just to try.
So he talked about the 5 import slots.
Yep.
And he said he might not use all of them, which on the face of it seems fairly normal thing to say-ish. I want to read more into it and suggest that maybe it's an indication that he has some Australians he'd quite like to spend some money on, or Kiwis, that he sees bringing in Australian or Kiwi marquees as a good way to spend that budget rather than worrying necessarily about imports. 2 or 3 good imports, or 4, but actually going, I'm going to target some high-paid Australian players for that budget and not spend it on imports.
I think that you might be right. I think you're reading a bit too much into it.
Potentially.
I think that he's just leaving his options open. Rather than saying, we're going to sign 5 imports. We're going to find 5 imports somewhere. You okay there, Cam? You just die.
No, I just have a cold and have done for weeks.
It's very...
instead of saying we're going to sign 5 guys, now we have to find budget around them. Like,
correct.
If we sign 4 of them and an extra Australian, that's fine.
Yeah, but actually, it's very rare to kind of state that outright. Most of the teams we see in the A-League are looking to fill all 5 of those spots.
You'd be surprised how many don't. Most teams get to 4.
4, correct.
Probably there's probably at least three clubs a season that don't use the 5th, and it doesn't really affect them.
Do you know what? I think it might also be the fact that if he gets 4 and pays them more, he can fill his squad with Australians and Kiwis and pay less, but still get a player that's of the quality of the league, just not a player that's going to set the world on fire like you will with your imports.
I think he just doesn't know yet, and so left his options open in the question. I think he was just very good at choosing his words to not say we're going to sign 5 imports.
Do you know what? I actually think he's got an idea. I think he probably knows of 3 guys that he wants to bring in right now to fill those import slots. And the rest of them are, I'll see what nuggets are out there. Simple as that.
I think that's exactly right. I think the things he's chosen to say, based on how well-spoken he was and how carefully prepared much of what he said felt, that you don't say, I might not fill all 5 spots, unless you might not fill all 5 spots, unless that's the thing you've thought about. You would just not address it. You wouldn't say anything about it. So I agree with Cam. I think he probably has an idea here of what he wants to do with that. Exactly what that idea is, I don't know, but I wonder if it's spend some more money on some Australians. It could well be simply we're going to have 4, but we're going to split the cost of 5 on those 4 so we can have 4 better ones. That could be it.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting to see the strategy around that, because clearly, like, I read into the fact he's mentioned it, as it's a thing he's thought about and he has a plan for.
So bringing it to the end of the interview now, which is a very strange way to end the press conference, but earlier in the press conference, Liam Hislop, Stuff.co.nz writer, been on the podcast a few times, referenced back to an interview that Rob did with Simon Hampton in December 2016 when Ernie left the club, where Mark Rudan was being touted as the front runner, and Simon Hampton said, is Mark Rudan a part of it, and part of the equation? And Rob said, I don't know who that is. And so Liam brought this up and said, 2 years ago this was said, how do you feel about that? And I thought Mark Rudan did a great job at firstly laughing it off, and then actually addressing it. And he said, I don't care what people say about me. I don't care what people say in the media. I'm here to do a job, which is a theme across the whole thing. And it was fine there. Then at the end of the press conference, Rob decided that he needed to pipe up and refute the question. And he used, this is an exact quote, I think that is a stupid question. Yeah. And he just... It was just strange to then directly attack the media. Given what we talked about in the last podcast about the ructions between Rob and the media, this is the first comment he's made to the media in a long time, and it's that. It was just a very strange thing.
It's the first time
he's
been on the record about something in quite some time.
Yeah.
And it was essentially just attacking one journalist,
which felt
very strange. Separate to that, I'm just going to note that I recorded a large portion of the press today, and I will post a link to that on the forum. So those of you who want to do the extra 20 minutes of listening around that are welcome to do so. You'll be able to hear this for yourself.
But just to see all the TV cameras just swing around to the back of the room, it's just not a good look for anybody. And I don't know what Rob wanting to get out of that.
It's he's taking it too personally. I think he views it as an unfair question. I don't think it was an unfair question at all. I mean, it was interesting because it was a thing that I've talked about with several people earlier this morning when we were speculating on who it was.
Exactly.
And I said, if it's Mark Rudan, that'll be interesting because Rob doesn't know who he is.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that quote very well because we've talked about Rudan as an option for a while. But one of the reasons we've kind of discounted him to some level
was
Rob had dismissed him so out of hand previously.
But the reason he dismissed him out of hand previously is possibly because he wasn't even thought of by the club as an option at that point. Rob might legitimately have just said, I don't know who that is. It might not. There was perhaps any kind of ulterior motive or meaning behind what he's saying. I think it's just inference. There's nothing.
I literally don't think there's any ulterior motive behind it. But I think if 2 years ago when we ended up signing Ernie, It was when Ernie left. If we didn't even – we weren't even aware of who Rudan was at that point, I would be surprised he was in the mix now, I guess, because I think he was as good an option back then as he is now.
And I totally agree.
For exactly the same reasons.
Totally
so,
agree.
So I read a bit into the fact that we didn't look at him then, therefore – we're probably not looking at him now. I think it's a reasonable question.
I think that's where the question came from. I sit next to Liam, and I feel like that is where his question was coming from. Not, hey, here's a bit of... I'm going to try and like lob a grenade in between you and your owner that you've just spoken really well about.
He would like there to be a little bit of juice to come out of that to feed into the story.
There was no bite.
Sure.
There was no bite, and it was fine. If it had blown up then and there, Rob getting involved might have made sense, maybe. But it was just a strange way to end this press conference.
Yeah.
It was a really good press conference. It was so positive.
A slightly sour note.
Yeah,
it was strange because I don't know that that's helping anyone. The question had been dealt with. It was 5 minutes earlier. Everyone had moved on, and you've brought it back to that as the last note of what was a very good press conference. And it's one of those ones where, I mean, if Rob doesn't want to build the bridge, that's fine. I understand to some extent his point of view around him feeling like he's been treated unfairly by the media and whatever. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand where he's coming from. But just coming out and attacking and, you know, basically throwing punches around it isn't going to help. It's only hurting your cause further, and it's not gonna get anything. And it certainly isn't going to make Liam write nice things about you. If you're already feeling like he's being mean to you, being mean back to him ain't going to fix that. So it's just very strange. I think it achieves very little for anyone. I would love to see Liam and Rob be able to work it out and actually write some good stuff, because Liam's a very good journalist who would have a lot of good things to say about the Phoenix if he had the access to the information he wanted. But instead, we're left with this kind of void that it's surely only hurting the reputation and you know, the local paper.
Actually, one good thing that I did see out of today was how much media was in the room. Because considering how little interaction has gone from the club to the media in the last few weeks and around all the rumours and stuff that's been going on, the fact that there were so many TV cameras and there were so many written journalists and so many other people in that room for that press conference was really, really good. The interest is still there. The passion for it is still there. We just need to buy into that a bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is something you guys had as well, but I definitely had after, obviously, I published a blog post that went alongside the last podcast, but I got quite a few approaches from various media hoping I would be willing to go on the record about what Rob said, because there absolutely is an appetite for hearing from the club. Obviously, I didn't take any of those up because it would be a weird, like, hearsay type scenario I wouldn't be comfortable with.
I turn things down for the same reason. I'm like, I don't want to talk to you just because I talk to Rob. Like, I'm not Rob.
No, we can talk about things I think. I'm happy to do those interviews, but doing interviews about what Rob said is a bit weird. Like, and the podcast and that blog post, we tried to keep at that level of, here's what Rob said, but also here's
our thoughts
on that and where we think that actually, what that means and where that lies, and, you know, not just say, Rob wanted me to tell you this, because that's not what happened.
That's so schoolboy. That's so schoolground if he did that, and that's not at all not what the intention was of that meeting.
But it was good that they were there in the room. I overheard, I don't know how true this is, but some of those TV cameras have been pulled away from Hurricanes training to be at this, because they viewed this as bigger than a Hurricanes training, and that's a great place for the club to be in.
Yeah.
And the club's at a point now where they have a great media savvy coach, and they're able to capitalize on this, and I hope they do. And
that absolutely,
if they can turn the next 3 months into a really positive moving forward, some good results in preseason, building up to October, there will be a buzz among the city. And that the media is a great way to start that.
Yeah, and if that ends up being that that it's much more about the players and the coach, and they're the ones doing the media, that's fine.
That's good thing.
That's obviously what we want it to be about. And if Rudan is clearly savvy enough to deal with questions the way he did and just go, look, that's not a question for me, I'm not going to talk about that, then great, because I think we can see that appetite's there for some stuff, and he'll be happy to talk about stuff that's within his remit, which will hopefully mean we get some of that media profile back, and hopefully it's around some good stuff rather than losing games. It's about winning games at home.
Yeah. Anything else on your list before we wrap this up, Dave?
No, that covers my list quite well. There's one more thing I've written. I've written universal approval. What the fuck?
Yeah, that was
because
weird.
Honestly, I have yet to see anyone other than a few stuff comments that wanted Ramon to be hired saying that this is a bad thing. I mean, there's been a couple who have been like, oh, I don't know who that is. probably Rob saying that. But, most of it has been, this is really good, which I was surprised by. I thought there would be a level of apathy around this.
I've got some negative comments. Some of the negative comments were, he looks excited to be here from the photos that I posted. So I posted the ones of him smiling.
I thought you had negative comments.
I've put out. And the first photograph I put out was of him holding a scarf in the ground of the background, not smiling, and that's what people picked up on. It's like, really, why are you turning this? Here's the guy, he's posed for a photograph, did he have to smile? Okay, fine, here's your photograph of him smiling. Here's another one of him smiling. He's smiling. Are you happy now? Focus on that. That's where it's coming. And then the other one I had was, oh, let's see how long he lasts.
Yeah,
and that was the only other negative comment.
But you look at the forums,
it's scary how positive
everything is. Very positive. And like, I think that's a good thing for us as a fan base who have been very angsty to actually have something that we're like, no, we can get around this. I can see why I've hired him. I think he'll do a good job. And that's a really nice place to be in, because my level of apathy, as you guys know, has been huge. And actually, all of a sudden, I'm excited for October, which is great.
It's great.
Great time to get it too, right before the World Cup. That big excitement for football.
It's amazing how much of a turnaround it's been in 24 hours, because there has been a lot of angst around the community, and it's definitely feels like excitement now. And I didn't expect quite such a wind of change from this announcement. I thought this will make some people happy. Other people will stay largely where they were, going, we'll see. But it's really been the opposite. Everyone going, this is good.
Which is very exciting.
Wait for him to sign some players.
Very exciting.
If he signs a bunch of, donkeys, then we'll be the first to call him out. But I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to sign a good squad, and we're going to keep getting excited.
Mm. If he signs a bunch of donkeys, then that brings up the Fox conspiracy. We got him, and now he's trying to get rid of us.
Two conspiracies on the podcast in 1 week. I love it.
Yeah, I know. Brilliant, isn't it?
Secretly, he's actually got the Sydney job. There's your tinfoil hat theory.
And Fox is paying some of that money to get rid of us first.
He's going to pull a
Tony. There's your tinfoil.
He's going to pull a Tony Popovich on us and leave 1 week before the season starts. Let's cross over. That'll do for Phoenix. And now we'll move on to a chat with the two Team Wellington boys we have sitting at the table, Ross Allen and Scott Hillier. How are we doing?
Good, thanks.
You guys are fresh off a Champions League victory. First of all, congratulations on the win. How does it feel to finally knock off, or as a club, to have finally knocked off Auckland City off the mantelpiece and take it out yourselves?
Okay. Yeah, I think, it's the reward for a really amazing season, and the hard work that everyone's put in, and obviously after that grand final loss to Auckland City, we had a job to do, and we wanted to go out there and right some wrongs. And we knew we had a great chance, our best chance in years, I think, and they were there for the taking, and I think we put in two performances in that semi-final worthy of a victory, and a great performance in both games in the final as well.
Yeah, so you played the first leg and then half the second leg?
Yes. So I started the first leg, played pretty much 90 in that one, and then, came on second half in Fiji.
So the two results, for those who might not have caught them, is the first leg was 6-0 against Lautoka, and the second leg was a hard-fought 4-3 victory. but in the end, 10-3 on aggregate, which is almost as comprehensive as they get. Scott, from your perspective, how did you feel playing in those two finals? They're two very different games, I guess.
Yes, no, I was obviously very happy to be there.
You didn't play the second one, actually, did you?
I was suspended for it, so it was a bit of
I just rubbed it in.
I just remembered that after I asked the question.
That's right, I was a bit disappointed not to be there.
Yeah. It's hard to know if that was deliberate or not. You missed the trip, but you missed Fiji, you missed the final. But, you don't have to travel all that way.
To be honest, it was nice of them to take me.
Yeah?
Yeah, I went for a bit of a nice holiday, but I was suspended from... So I've been given a bit of wrong information. Jose was actually quite disappointed when he told me as well. Personally, from my side, I was really disappointed because I would have liked to have finished the job off, but it was my first Oceania Champions League as well. So to be there would have been awesome. But obviously for the boys to go and get the job done, playing in that first game, I think we felt like we were quite comfortable going into the second game. So, from the sideline, it did look like a hard game. It did look like a hard game, so I was kind of happy not to be involved. But, just happy. Obviously, we got through Auckland City's fixture, and then went and put on a good show with our first home game.
Well, that was a tough game as well, those two. I don't think I've seen a more hardly fought game between two teams at David Farrington ever.
Hardly fought? Hard fought.
Okay. You know what I mean? At David Farrington, the intensity of that game was just so high, and it was... I don't mean to degrade our National League at all, but it's something we don't see in our National League very all. But I think the occasion added to it. Did it feel like that on the park, that it was just that extra step up, that extra edge to the game against Auckland?
Yeah, well, I think it was such a big occasion, so much pressure for both teams, and the fact that it wasn't a final and there was still, you know, the prize of a final awaiting the winner just added to it. And I think... you'd had some really big games between the two built up throughout the season, you know, victories for both sides and a draw. So, it was huge. And I think we were a bit unlucky not to get a result, winning result in that game.
Yeah.
There weren't many chances, but I think the football we played was outstanding. And, I was on the bench for most of that game, but it was so good to watch. I've never enjoyed a game of football, you know, more being sat on the bench.
It was that classic exciting nil draw, right?
Yeah.
So I think we had the obviously the away goals in our mind.
Totally.
So we were all on our toes. If we conceded a goal, we knew we were up against the wall. So I think we just played well as a team, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the second leg, obviously the away goal, we all came into fruition. How tough was that when you know that just one more, if you slip up once, and it got very close to being the case, how tough was that playing the last 20 minutes against Auckland, up in Auckland?
Well, I think we should also say it was you that put it in for the second.
Yes. Yeah, I was avoiding that.
I'm not avoiding that at all. So
I was about to say that.
How hard,
stitch up Scotty, no.
Yeah, so how hard was that personally for you, obviously?
Very hard. We had to be honest, there were a few of the Auckland City supporters behind the goal mouth before that incident happened. were giving us a bit of stick. I don't know what happened. I think it might have been Scotty Basale maybe going up for a catch or something, coming down on McCowick. They were getting behind us. So that last 20 minutes was tough, obviously, that we were just, I think we knew that we had to park up, defend our lives out, get the ball away at all costs, basically. We don't really enjoy playing that way, but I think it was just the way we had to sort of graft out that result. And the supporters they were nagging away, but it was nice for that final whistle to blow. I don't know about those extra minutes, but we got there.
Yeah. When I say 20 minutes, it's 20 minutes after the 80th minute, which isn't an exaggeration. I think the supporters up there, they'll get on your back, but we did the same to Auckland when they were here. So I can't really...
I enjoy that side of it.
Good.
Yeah. I think the best thing about that game was we kept them quiet. You know, they had a little bit in the last 10 when they were pushing, but the way we played first half, and, you know, it could have been 3-4-0.
Totally.
We silenced that crowd, and the boys did such a fantastic job. And we just got over the line in the end.
Yeah, you mentioned that you don't like playing ugly football, and that's... One of the things that Jose's really done well this year is getting the team playing really good football. Obviously, Jose's a very good coach, and he's able to do that, but does it require buy-in from all the players as a team to spur each other on to be able to do that and implement those tactics on the field?
Yeah, I think I've never been involved in a team that... It's so about that first and foremost. You're not necessarily thinking about your game, but it's what you do for the team, your role as a player within that team, and how can you enhance someone else, or, you know, how can we get the ball to a certain area on the pitch most efficiently and quickly by being in a position that might be unselfish. You might be making a run the other way, and it's, you know, for me coming into it mid-season, it was really interesting to see and challenge myself to develop to that system. But I think that, you know, that's why we've been so successful, is everyone has bought into that and wants to be successful, and that's what we've got to do.
Scott, you've been here a little bit longer than Ross, but have you seen how Jose's been able to impart that culture on the club, as well as the tactical nous, the culture that he's built?
Yes, for sure. Obviously, being with Jose for a few seasons now, he's big, very big about team culture. We all get along very well. We've got a good group of mates together. I think basically the word that summed it up there with Rocco was the unselfish sort of runs.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of all the boys in the team. They just want to be there and do the job, you know. So those unselfish runs are basically sort of what we try to achieve. I know it sounds a bit different in saying that, but basically doing the job.
Yeah. I think as a supporter on the sideline, we see that. We see that someone like Jack Henry will make a run down the wing and never get the ball. Yeah. And he'll do that four times in a row and never get the ball but not get pissed off at it.
Yeah.
And other teams, you see, we watch it on TV, we see guys getting pissed off at each other for not passing the ball, but that's just not a thing at this club. And and that really sums up what Team Wellington's about.
I like it's the attitude of if he goes down there, eventually it's going to come. But while he's going down there, it gives Ross more space in the midfield. Yeah. And it means that somewhere there's a lot more space for someone else to run into and get more, you know, get the ball and perhaps create a better opportunity. But eventually it's going to go out there. Eventually it's going to, he'll receive it and then his run will be worth it. And all those other times that he's made it and hasn't got it still pays off.
Yeah, I think it's definitely noticeable that Team Wellington, one of those teams that don't seem to get frustrated with each other. Mm. Often the other teams in that league, you can see it when they go down by a goal or whatever, the frustration kind of creeps in very quickly and there's infighting and stuff. And that's not something we see from you guys. Do you think that's just a result of that culture?
Definitely the culture, yeah. Even having the sort of the recs, our flat about, we can get the boys around, you know, just have a social drink, even just a barbecue. You probably wouldn't find that in most National League teams.
No.
I think that's, it's outside of football, which has probably put us, made us the team we are.
Yeah, it's been great for me to come in. You know, I had a really good football family back home in Guernsey, and to find something like this, you know, it's more than I could have expected. And I think that's it's just great to be involved in a project that it's not just about the football, it's about it's life, you know, we're all here to enjoy it, and there's no point playing if you're not enjoying it. That's the ultimate that's the ultimate reason why we all play. So it's learning and working together and trusting the process. And I think that's, like you said, when we go down a goal, we know if we keep playing the way we've been training, it's going to come because we've got the talent there. So it's just about believing and you know, not worrying if things aren't going our way.
We were talking about this before we started recording the podcast, but how football kind of is one of those few sports around the world that can do that, where you can come over from half around the world, come to Wellington and New Zealand, all places, and have a family and have a football family. I mean, how does this move come about? How does that happen for you?
Well, it's bonkers, really, because...
Bonkers.
Yeah. I think...
There's a cultural difference in there.
No, I think there's... it's crazy, like you say, because I know people who've moved over here and they've been here 2 years and they really struggle. They've struggled to find friends and people they can get close to. And I look at the people I've got a connection with now in 6 months, it's, you know, you're talking upwards of 50 people in and around one, you know, one football club, which is amazing. Like, live with three of the boys the last few months, and you get more connections through that. Whereas, you know, like you say, you can really struggle if you move to the other side of the world and you don't know anyone. So, yeah, it's been a great journey so far.
How did the journey start?
I travelled around New Zealand on a big world trip 2016-2017. Really enjoyed New Zealand. Thought it was a great country. And then a few friends back home had been out here and played a little bit. National League and Winter League and stuff like that. So I spoke to them and I was keen to get out here to sort of live, work, get on the working holiday visa scheme. And then see if the football I could get something going with the football, because obviously being 30, I didn't want to just retire and do something like that. I wanted to keep it going. I came back out but just before I left, I think BBC Twitter got hold of an article from Guernsey FC that they'd released saying about me leaving. And they picked up on it and it went kind of viral. And then the next day I had a bunch of clubs over in New Zealand get in touch with me, and one of them was Team Wellington. So I was really keen to get involved with one of the National League clubs, and Wellington was a city I really liked when I was travelling. So it was the first port of call.
So is that why you came to Wellington out of all the offers? It was because you liked the city?
It was the first National League club to get in touch. So I thought, I'll try them out first. That's only fair. And Stu Widdowson got in touch, and he passed me on to onto Jose.
In the street,
And yeah, and then I met the boys, and I really enjoyed it. Traveled around, trained with a few other clubs, but this was the place I wanted to come back to. And when they wanted to sign me on, I was over the moon. And yeah, the rest is history.
Well. Yeah.
You probably made the right decision, really, to end up with a runners-up medal, a winner's medal, and a possible trip to Dubai coming up at the end of the year.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy when you think about it.
And a winter league season for Miramar as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Your path to Team Wellington is a bit different, Scotty. You want to talk us through that one?
So I've been a bit around the place, to be honest. Yeah. Started off in Metameta, which is my childhood. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Metameta. How it came about, I was in Hamilton studying, doing my degree there. I was playing for Wybot, and then a few of the Auckland boys from Central ended up coming down for a season at Wybot. So Mario and Finn Cochran, Adam Mitchell. And I made good friends with them during that season. Mm-hmm. After that, that was the last year of Wybot.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'd finished studying at that time as well. Yep. So I was like, I wouldn't mind sort of getting out of Hamilton. Hamilton was nice while I was there, but I was like, yeah.
You've done your time. Yeah.
So I ended up going up to Auckland, talking to Jose, and he was coaching the Central team at the time.
Yeah.
So I played with him, ended up signing at Central, playing with underneath Jose, and I think it was that season we won the Northern League.
Yep.
Yeah. And like I say, with him, the team culture was awesome. You know, like we just all got along well together. I think even the Central guys, they welcomed me in. It's obviously the way Jose likes to have his teams run.
Mm.
And then it's basically how I got to Wellington. So knowing Jose through Central.
Followed Jose down?
Yeah. So he was probably shouldn't say this, but I was fairly close to coming to Team Wellington in my WITAC season.
Mm-hmm.
I was if Jose probably got the job maybe a few weeks or a bit earlier.
Yeah.
I was definitely interested to go with him because I enjoyed playing underneath him. But in saying that, I loved my season at WITAC as well.
Yeah.
When I was in Auckland, so Millie looked after me, and to be honest, we probably could have beaten Team Wellington in
that
semi-final.
Tough end of that season, yeah.
That was a cracking game of football. One of the best games of football I've ever seen live.
The most ridiculous game of football I've ever seen.
If you look at that one, looking back at that, I'm the one that missed that last penalty, so it could have been rigged.
After conceding six as well.
Terrible. Yeah.
It was stitch up Scotty Day, isn't it?
Yeah. It wasn't a great day for any defender when it was 6-6 at the final whistle.
Definitely not. It was an up and down, enjoyable game to be involved with, but like I say, I wanted to see out that season with WITAC, and then I was always talking to Jose sort of during the season and after that season. I ended up going to Melbourne for mm-hmm. a little stint over there, played for a bit, and I basically said to Jose, I'm coming to Wellington next season, and he got in contact with me, and it went from there. So.
And again, a very good end to the season.
Exactly.
How do you feel like working under Jose, going away and coming back, has helped progress you as a footballer?
Obviously, playing in different environments always helps. Learning sort of just those, I don't know, in Melbourne. I love Melbourne.
Yeah.
I was there working, full time, and turning up the trainings after. You still learn a lot just about life skills and things, but football-wise, out of Jose, you know what to expect with him. You know that the positioning is a huge one, and he just lets you go and play. So as I say, as a player, I'm very comfortable playing underneath him because he knows you very well as a player. And obviously, if you miss a pass, he's not bothered. Like he knows you're going to go out and hit the next pass. He gives you that freedom to play with, and that's what I like playing underneath Jose. So. I think he's developed me a lot as a player from the first season I was with him, and then even the second, even coming into Team Wellington, I'm still improving. I've only really been in the centre back role maybe for 2-3 seasons now.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely still learning as a centre back, and he's developing me quite well as a player. So
talking back to the Handy Prem season, it was potentially not quite as tight at the end of the season with Auckland as we would have liked it to be. But to go through a season and push Auckland all the way again and then go down in the final, was that tough to then pick yourselves back up again and play a quarter final and a semi final and a final?
Yes and no. I think we knew with the sort of don't like to say it, the restrictions, it makes probably makes it sound a bit harsh, but with the team that they'd put out and the and the ISPS, you know, they're and going into O League, we knew that if we could compete with them and the ISPS, we would be right there
because
in the
they can't put out the same 11 because of import rules is what they're alluding to.
So we were in the final. I think we had the mindset to go and play our game.
I think you absolutely did.
I felt like we played very well. We probably could have come away. It was just that one little maybe two players got pulled out of their positions and that goal that they scored.
It was such a tight game. I think it was always going to be one goal that would win that game and all pens. That was it.
It could have gone either way. Yeah. And unfortunately, you came out the wrong side of it this time around. But the last few finals as well have been tight.
It just fired us up to win O-League. I think that was the key. We would have taken winning Champions League over, you know, that any day.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was something the club hadn't done. So we were disappointed, but, you know, the next day we forgot about it, got back to training, and I think there was a buzz actually in training that next week. We just sort of were excited to go again and get into that quarterfinal, and then obviously we knew Auckland were our semi-final team.
We got a shot at them.
For the last few seasons, there's clearly been a kind of Auckland have been the ones to beat, but I think from the outside it's very much seemed this year like that relationship between Team Wellington and Auckland has become more of a rivalry. Mm. And after that grand final, lots of you boys were saying to us in the stands, you know, don't worry, we'll get them in the O-League. And, you know, it felt like that rivalry might exist for you guys as well. Is that something you think is there now?
Go on, Scotty, because I haven't been here long enough to know.
Like I said, I've been here for a season as well, but I feel like there's quite a strong rivalry. My first proper game for Team Wellington was against Auckland, and it was like we were out there to win it.
Scoring debut, if I remember rightly.
Yes, and that was probably the first goal. I think I scored later on in the season, but luckily I got that, otherwise I would have been doing a bit of a streak. But there's going back to the rivalry, for sure. That first game, I think the boys get up for the games against Auckland for sure. It's probably going to get even bigger now.
Yeah, now that you've knocked them off, the big one, yeah.
Yes, definitely look forward to all the games we play against Auckland.
For me, it's like I think games against them, it's a step up, it's a different level. I think my first game was Hawke's Bay. And then I think it was Tasman and then Auckland, and going up there it was like, oh, okay, right, here we go, this is serious football. And it's great, you know, it's so fun to play in those games, you know, when you're playing against really talented players. But I've always said since I've been here, training's the hardest thing for me, because I'm playing against people like Scotty in training, and you know, the best players in New Zealand. So that's what I find fun, and I think that prepares you better than anything for the games is training against the best.
How have you found the quality of football compared to back home?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It took me a few weeks to really kind of figure it out, and I think that's because you look at the UK and there's what, 60 million people, so every league's kind of found its level, and it's quite a consistent so our league back home was, you know, there wasn't really too much between the top and the bottom teams. We could play the top team and have a tight game, and then, you know, lose comfortably to the team who's bottom. So
which division is that? Is that Conference South or
it's a couple below the Conference?
Ryman.
I think it's changed name, but yeah, it was the Ryman League. Whereas here you've obviously got a lot less people, so there's a bigger range, but the top is definitely a lot better than the level I was playing. Mm-hmm. Like I say, us lot and our training sessions. Whereas, you know, I think the level we play at is probably similar to some of the lower league teams.
And you see that with the score lines here, where someone will get knocked right at 4-0 and you go, yep, that's normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So obviously, there's no contracts in place for the next season yet, but I'm guessing both of you want to stick around for Team Wellington and head off to the Club World Cup?
Yeah, why not, eh?
Exactly.
100% love to. That's what we're built for, so hopefully we'll be welcome back. Yeah. But, obviously we'll be looking forward to that. I think Jose's basically said he wants to keep the core squad together. As you can see, there's quite a few players that are coming back to Miramar for that, for that reason. So... hoping, fingers crossed, that we'll still be there, but I'm very much looking forward to it.
Who is running the Central League team for Miramar this season?
Scotty Hales.
Okay. So,
cool.
That's good. Provides the consistency across the coaching method. That's nice, actually. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's good for me, obviously, coming out and having that transition and that consistency throughout the year, because otherwise I'd be maybe flying off somewhere else or whatever. So it's good to stick around and be in the same environment and, you know, new group of friends and like the same sort of family, basically. So it's really good for me.
Yeah, once the winter football season ends, it'll be straight into pre-season and building for the Club World Cup now, I guess.
Of course. Well, I think you almost look at this winter season as a slow build before pre-season, if you know what I mean. So we can taper off a little bit now and then start building up, you know, be in communication with our trainer. I think a few of us are doing it already. I went for a run with him today, so it's already
his buddies.
It's already
he's trying to get brownie points because he thinks that Jose's going to listen.
It was 12k Jose. But that's the thing. I think like Scotty said, it's really important that a lot of us stick around, stay close together, and like I say, one, we've got to enjoy the moment because we've just done something incredible and it's a massive highlight in our football careers. But I think we've all got to work and look forward to December, and, you know, fingers crossed we'll all be on that plane.
Do you consider the thought of December daunting or exciting?
Oh, exciting. Only exciting.
Because you could be coming, and I know it's a stretch at the moment because you still have to win a couple of games to get there, but it could be Real Madrid, for example, and that's quite a staggering thought.
Well, that's it. How good is it to be in the same competition as them? So I think first and foremost, you just got to look at that. It's unreal. My dad joked just before I came out in November, he was like, "Oh, Team Wellington, well, they play in the Champions League, and if you win that, you go to the Club World Cup." And I'm like, "Yeah, right, Dad, okay. I haven't even flown to New Zealand yet." So, you know, 6 months down the line, it's becoming a reality.
I have a favour to ask if you do get there and you do play Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Sergio Ramos is not particularly popular in my household at this point in time, so feel free to do some damage.
Okay. Cam is a Liverpool supporter.
I'll get a shirt so you can bring it back and then you can burn it.
Burn it? That'd be fantastic, thank you.
There's probably no way that you're burning a Real Madrid shirt if you do it.
There's no way he's giving it to me either.
I might sell it to you.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. I think Auckland City's shown that on the right day, you can do really well over there. But Auckland City's also shown that if you have an off day, that's it. You come home. So from that perspective, as a supporter who gets to watch this, it's really going to be really exciting to see how you guys can build to something bigger than Oceania. Like,
yeah, for sure.
We kind of have to. We understand Oceania's place in football, but to go to the level beyond that, like New Zealand going to World Cup, like it's huge, and this is actually a really big thing in football. And even though you're only playing the local champions, that's still the champion of a very good league. So,
I think it's going to be awesome to see. I think Jose's built us well to win the Oceania Champions League, so I think it's going to be awesome to see what we can actually do building towards a Club World Cup.
It's a good challenge for him as well.
Sure.
That's it. I think, you know, he's not just going to rest on like what we've done. I think there's going to be a whole another step up to prepare for that. It's not a prize as such. It's like we want to go there and win football games. So that's what's really exciting. I think in the build up to it, what he's going to do, what we're going to, you know, who's going to be up for it, who's going to really put in the time and the energy to want to be there.
Brilliant. Anything else around the table before we wrap up? All right. Thank you very much for joining us, both of you.
No worries.
Scott Hillier and Ross Allen.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome back anytime. If you want to come and chat Miramar and Central
League. Well, actually, I do have one question.
Oh, sure.
So there's four of you living in this one flat.
Two at the moment.
Two. Yeah, okay. We did have four. Did you all like line up your medals along the mantelpiece and have all of those trophies and shit up there as well at the same time? Because that'd have been quite a good photo.
I think those medals got a bit of a dealing to that last night in Fiji, to be honest. around the Lautoka City Centre. I'm pretty sure a few of the boys actually might have lost them. We'll keep that on the quiet.
Wow.
No, I don't know if they lost them, but they definitely went around their necks when they came home. Yeah. So hopefully they were still in their pockets or something.
Good. That'll be the last thing you want to lose.
Yeah, don't want to lose those.
They probably deserve the blowout, to be fair.
Yeah. It sounds like it was a good night in Fiji. We won't go into the
Yeah.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us, guys. It was great.
No worries. Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that'll do for this week. Big thanks to T-Dubs Boys for joining us. Big thanks to Cam for making it out this way despite sick family and sick Cam, apparently.
Yeah, I'll try not to cough on the pod next time.
Thank you. And big thanks to Dave for making lots of notes.
Can you take that pop shield home and wash it, please?
Yeah. Take the mic with you as well.
No.
That's your mic from now on.
I'm really hoping that you guys have to use this one for your TW greatest of all time.
Nobody calls it that.
The greatest of all time.
That's what GOAT stands for, isn't it?
Oh, so like part of me,
but it's not in that context.
Yeah. Team Wellington's greatest of all time.
Yeah, that's something that I should bring on another one. But every time I read it, I'm like, T-Dub GOAT, Team Wellington greatest of all time, yep. Which is not true.
That's how I read it every time.
But yeah, T-Dub GOAT is good. Thanks to Dave for coming along. Having to talk to me on a podcast.
You're sick of hanging out with me. You don't have to lie.
Yeah, it's good having you here. Less of me.
I'm just really stoked to have adult company after the last 2 days of having loads of children company. So thank you.
How was Olaf's Frozen Adventure?
Oh, she still hasn't watched it yet.
Oh.
Yeah, but she loves the That Time of Year song. She's huge on it. So
That Time of Year song?
Yeah.
Okay, I have no idea what that is.
Have you seen Olaf's Frozen Adventure?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, there you go then.
Yeah. All right, thank you for listening.
Neither have I, but yeah, no one can.
I helped Karen download it.
I'm not even
it.
Sure what that is.
I helped Karen download
it. You sent me a link for a movie I wanted to watch.
It's only 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a short film.
Okay, yeah, good. That'll do for this week. Thank you for listening, and goodbye. Cheers.
Oceania Champions League winners.
So close.
I forgot winners. I should not forget that one.